Some of you will remember a man named James Carville. He was candidate Bill Clinton's campaign manager back in the 1992 presidential election that Clinton actually went on to win. And Carville, at one point in the campaign, realized that his team needed some help staying on message, and they needed some clarity. So he wrote up a list of three guiding principles to help his staff, and they hung on the wall of the Little Rock, Arkansas campaign office. And some of these you will remember because it was made very famous, one of the lines during a presidential debate. Now, while these were intended for internal use only, they quickly became slogans of the entire campaign. And Carville's sign simply said three things: change versus more of the same, don't forget healthcare, the economy, stupid. You may remember that line. And I'd submit to you that we can find variations of these in today's gospel. So I'll start with change versus more of the same. Now, I'm not sure what Zacchaeus had heard about Jesus or why he was so intent on seeing him, but Zacchaeus would not take no for an answer. And we are told that he was vertically challenged, and so he needed a way to get a better look at Jesus. And so he did something that would have been shocking to people at that time. I mean, it would shock us today. Imagine you're at the St. Patrick's Day parade downtown, and you see a guy in a three-piece suit with nice shoes and a gold watch scrambling up a tree to try to get a better look at a celebrity who's passing by. So for a grown man of some social status to do what Zacchaeus did was downright embarrassing. But this is what I find so compelling about Zacchaeus. He was willing to take a risk and reposition himself so that he could get a better look at Jesus and so that Jesus could get a better look at him. Now, we are all probably familiar with the old truism, if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep getting what you've always gotten. Now, I don't know about you, but this is often true of my spiritual life. I mean, it's just kind of there. It's not bad, but it's not amazing either. And at a deeper level, I often know that something in my life probably needs to be repositioned or changed. But unlike Zacchaeus, I don't always go after it with much vigor. I'm busy or tired or distracted. Zacchaeus today urges us to take some action. Maybe there is something that you have been holding on to that you just need to let go of. Maybe you've been delaying taking a step that you know you need to take. Maybe you need more quiet time with God to discern what's next in your life. Maybe there's a hurt that needs your attention so that you can heal. Zacchaeus invites us to be bold and hungry in our relationship with God, to make ourselves visible and available for God's plans, even if they take us to unexpected places. Don't forget healthcare. Now, you may be thinking, what does this story have to do with healthcare? And I appreciate your asking that, because it's on my mind too. So, Zacchaeus is described as a wealthy tax collector. Now, a brief word on tax collectors, just in case you don't know. How many of you here love to engage the IRS? You can't wait to file your taxes, and year after year, you too secretly hope that you might be audited so that you can spend even more quality time with the Internal Revenue Service. Well, back in Jesus' time, people were even less fond of tax collectors. You see, the Roman occupiers were very smart oppressors. They made certain Jewish people become the tax collectors for the rest of their kin, so the Romans didn't ever have to touch the money. The tax collectors were allowed to skim a little bit off the top to take care of themselves and their own families, but it was always at the expense of their own community. So it was just kind of assumed that tax collectors were corrupt. And because of this, Zacchaeus and his family were outcasts, like so many other people in Jesus' time. Now, one thing I appreciate about the gospel is that it really stretches me today. I mean, the Gospels are usually filled with stories of Jesus welcoming lepers, sex workers, addicts. I am so down with that. I can get behind that all day long. But welcoming a corrupt and wealthy capitalist. Now, I don't know who comes to mind for you when you hear the words corrupt and wealthy. Just let yourself picture someone for a moment. But that's who Jesus goes out of his way to engage today. Now, I know in our household, whenever we want to bemoan the state of modern capitalism, we just say two words, Jeff Bezos. And the other person goes, oh my God, I know. Jesus wants to have dinner with them too. Are you kidding me? This is what drives me nuts about Jesus, is that no one is outside of the reach of his kingdom. That's why this is a healthcare story, because it's a story about healing. At one level, it is about the personal transformation of Zacchaeus. My guess is, as a tax collector, Zacchaeus had been living a divided and painful life, and he wanted to be healed of this somehow. But at a deeper level, this is a story about healing the divisions in our human community. Jesus makes a place for everyone, including people that I don't think deserve a place. And he invites us into this healing work as we challenge our own judgments and the divisions we can sometimes perpetuate. Jesus fully knew who Zacchaeus was and what he had done, but instead of shaming or condemning him, he invites him for table fellowship. Jesus knows that you can't build a kingdom of love on hate or shame or punishment. So he offers an invitation that tries to restore everyone who's involved, which is why it's about the economy. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, but the past few weeks, our Sunday gospel readings from Luke have been hammering us with messages about economics. The gospel writer Luke, maybe more than any of the other gospels, was very focused on this and the deep connections between the gospel and money. And this is where the gospel is perfect for Halloween, because many of its implications are pretty scary and haunting, even if we have limited money, power, and privilege. You see, Zacchaeus' sin was not some moral failure. His sin was related to his participation in unjust economic systems that damaged his community. Now, maybe we haven't defrauded others, as Zacchaeus might have done, but many of us do benefit from unjust systems every day. And like Zacchaeus, we may not have designed the systems, but we are part of them. And so Jesus wants to know, just like Capital One, what's in your wallet? And how did it get there? Zacchaeus, who already seems to know what Jesus is thinking, offers a blueprint of how to make things right. Now, it's funny, in our tradition, I had heard this story many, many times growing up Catholic, but no one ever focused on this last part, and I wonder why. Because Zacchaeus says he's going to give away, or maybe already has given, 50% of his wealth to the poor, and he will pay back, or has already paid, anyone who was defrauded 4 times what was taken. Now, these numbers are no accident. Zacchaeus, the so-called sinner, was actually invoking a biblical mandate that Israel had largely turned away from. This tradition of Jubilee, whereby every 7 years and every 7 times 7 years, the land would be returned to rightful owners, debts would be canceled, and anyone in servitude would be set free. Imagine in our world right now, if all land was returned to its rightful owners, if debts were canceled, and anyone in servitude would be set free. Now, they had the Jubilee principle even 3,000 years ago because they knew that wealth is often generated through oppression, and it gets stuck and concentrated in the hands of a few people. The educator and indigenous activist Nikki Sanchez, who has a great TED Talk called What You Can Do About Your Country's Ugly History, says that history is not our fault but it is absolutely our responsibility. And she encourages us to take steps with our money and our privilege that would make our grandchildren proud. The gospel today shows us that conversion and repair are intimately tied. And I would submit that it's not just for the things that we have done personally, it's for the things that we have done collectively. Now, my in-laws have been great teachers for me in this regard, and I appreciate having them here today. Back in the 60s, my father-in-law, Frank, and his father, Frank Sr., were running a Pepsi-Cola franchise here in Rochester, and they needed and wanted to expand. And so Frank Sr. was on good terms with then-Mayor Loeb, and they made plans for the Pepsi bottling plant to be located on the corner of Joseph Ave and Nassau Street. And that building is still there today. No one really thought twice about the deal because it made good business sense. And it kept the business in the city. And so the Pepsi plant was constructed. And Pepsi became a thriving, local, family-owned business. Now, decades later, Frank Jr. was in a presentation on redlining in Rochester by Shane Wiegand. This was a presentation that was done at Spiritus quite a few years ago, and some of you may have seen it. And during the presentation, unexpectedly, he hears a story recounted of how Frank Staropoli Sr. and Mayor Loeb had cut a deal to build a new Pepsi plant, which had displaced a small but vibrant black church and also displaced numerous black families who lived in the area. My father-in-law was dumbfounded and distraught, and he and his wife, Sue, began a quest to try to make things right for a history that they now saw from the vantage point of the displaced. Pepsi had thrived and generated wealth, yet that success had come at a cost to others. And while they've never been able to successfully track down the leadership of the church or all of the folks who lived in the neighborhood, they have both committed themselves to making reparations for this, which includes significant financial commitments, significant commitments to forging relationships with people in that neighborhood and elsewhere, and a commitment to keep telling the story. And for the record, their grandchildren are indeed proud. Theologian and visioning board member Ched Myers says that for Luke, a change of heart is necessary, but not sufficient. True conversion requires that the structures of economic apartheid must be deconstructed. And Zacchaeus has removed the first brick. But it's only the first brick. Now, a gospel like this brings up more questions than answers for me. But I think it's important that we all lean into these questions individually and collectively. You know, last weekend, about 50 folks from our community took a trip to Ganondagan in Victor, New York. And it's the state historic site, which highlights the ongoing art, culture, and legacy of the Seneca people on whose unceded land we all reside. And our visit provoked a lot of conversation and reflection among us about what do we do to try to address this historical harm that we may not have caused, but we surely benefit from. The great writer Ernest Hemingway once said that we are all apprentices in a craft where we never become a master. And I think of this often as we try to follow the way of Jesus. We keep looking to him as apprentices to learn and relearn the way of love, the way of justice, the way of forgiveness, the way of joy, the way of compassion, the way of inclusion, and the way of repair. And I love the saying from the Jewish tradition, you are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. And so I pray that we all stay engaged. I pray that we all might keep climbing trees, asking questions, and keep remembering what James Carville said back in 1992, change versus more of the same. Don't forget healthcare, and it's about the economy.